Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Celebrate over 100 years of steak perfection during the Omaha Steaks Anniversary Sale. Save 50% site-wide on USDA certified tender steaks and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED at OmahaSteaks.com today. Don't wait. Shop the anniversary sale at OmahaSteaks.com to save 50% on legendary steaks and more. Plus, get an extra $35 off with code CERTIFIED. Minimum purchase may apply. See site for details.
The Batteries Included podcast is brought to you with United Chargers. United Chargers presents the Grizzly range of EV chargers. There's the original Grizzly Classic, a powerful, heavy-duty, portable EV charging station built to withstand the toughest conditions. The Grizzly Duo, a dual-port unit designed to charge two vehicles at the same time. The Grizzly Mini, a small, portable charging station built with an indoor-outdoor rated cast aluminium enclosure. And the Grizzly Smart, a revolutionary smart EV charger. All Grizzly chargers come with a convenient 24-foot cable and the ability to adjust the current from 16 amps all the way up to 40 amps. That's 9.6 kilowatts. Plus, they're IP67 rated. Built in Canada with the highest quality materials. Order yours now at unitedchargers.com. That's unitedchargers.com.
Hello and welcome to the Batteries Included podcast. It's May the 16th, 2024, and this is episode number 37. Thank you very much for joining us. On today's show, we'll be talking about the refresh of the Kia EV6, 100% tariffs being placed on electric vehicles made in China, freshly released details about the US version of the VW ID Buzz, a Grizzly E giveaway, and of course, much, much more. I'm Dominic Ioni. Joining us today is the scintillating Mr. Tom Malogny, Senior Editor at Inside EVs and host of the YouTube channel State of Charge. We also have the meticulous Mr. Martin Lee from the EV News Daily podcast, which is available on all the best podcast platforms. And of course, Kyle Connor will join us shortly from the majestic, practically palatial halls of Out of Spec Studios, which I believe this week may be the interior of a Chevrolet Silverado EV. So that's where he's producing a large number of high voltage videos for a number of YouTube channels. All right, let's kick this thing off with Tom. Let's start with you this week. How you doing?
All right, guys, what's happening?
All right, Friday morning, man. it feels like it's a rough one, but I don't even know why, because we're all here, we're all good. Let's start with I understand
what I've been up to.
Yeah, oh, well, so I understood that you, I was on Twitter yesterday, and you have this, some EV hardware up on your desk in your studio there, and yeah, I just thought we'd start with telling us what's going on with this.
All right, well, we shouldn't spend too much time on this, but I thought it would be a nice gesture for me to actually give out some hardware for the chargers that I select as my best chargers of the year. I've been doing this for a little while now, and I always get the companies respond to me when I put out my best chargers of the year. I usually get emails sometimes from the CEOs of companies. A lot of the companies use it in their advertising that State of Charge selected this as their best charger of the year. So this year I said, let me step it up a little bit and actually make awards and send them to the companies, because I know they like putting these things up in their display cases and so forth. So, I made them, I made seven, little trophies up, and, I'm sending them to, the companies that I selected this year as the best, charging equipment. And, I gave them a little heads up already contacted everyone except for Tesla, because unfortunately the team that I deal with over at, Tesla Charging, I got bounced back emails that they're no longer with the company. And it's unfortunate because I had a crew of people over at Tesla Charging that I've been dealing with in the last few years. and they don't seem to be with the company anymore. These are high, very high ranking people in Tesla charging, and not supercharging, which is interesting because from what I understood with all those layoffs recently, it was the Tesla, the supercharging team. But right. this team that I dealt with was just for home charging. They had nothing to do with supercharging, the home charging equipment. And one person actually did reach back to me and said, look, the people you've been dealing with are no longer here, but give me a little time and we'll see if we can arrange something with you for have some communication moving forward. Which is promising. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm sending out these and I already contacted the other companies. They're all very happy. Some of the companies already put out on social media pictures of it saying, you know, we're getting this. So it should be fun. You know, it's not nice gesture, I think, on my part to send out to say, look, not only did I select you as having good charging equipment, but I appreciate that you make, I read a nice little handwritten letter to the company saying, I appreciate that you're putting out good equipment at reasonable prices. And, you know, I know they appreciate that.
Nice. So where can we learn which companies are getting what?
Well, I put out a video a couple of weeks ago, the best chargers of 2024, and I put it up on Inside EVs also. So it's basically born from that video. I actually wanted to bring the one that I was going to give up to United Chargers when I visited them, which we're going to talk about really next, but I didn't get them in time. So I was going to hand deliver it to Gleb. I actually was going to fly to all the companies and hand deliver it but with everyone's schedules, I couldn't do it effectively. Like I wanted to make one tour in like 3 days and go to all the companies, but people weren't available this week and that week. So I said, you know, I'm just going to send them to you and, you know, do what you want with it. And, but I know they appreciate it. And I think it's just a fun thing to do. I'm going to start doing this every year now.
Nice. I think it's great. They look awesome. And I think, it's good for you. It's good for the charger makers. And it brings actually some recognition to that. That's an item you don't really hear a lot about it, but it's kind of an important piece of this whole puzzle, right?
Yeah, for sure. You know, and there's so many different units out there today. It's daunting for people that are new and just get a car and they're like, well, I have no idea what to do. Go on online and search, and there's dozens and dozens. And you know, that's why so many people have so many questions about, which one should I buy?
Right. Well, that's awesome. Anthony's joining us from a vacation on a beach in Jamaica. Well, that's awesome. Hey, Anthony, enjoy the surf down there.
Yeah.
And see, we also got a little special super chat here from 10 Lawn Gnomes. He says, lock in your prediction now for the Kia EV3 announcement next Thursday. Physical size, specs, will it have all-wheel drive, interior features, timing? Yeah, so that's kind of a big thing next week or this week coming up. The Kia EV3 will be revealed on, I guess, next Thursday. I haven't really looked at it. I just know it was coming up, the 23rd. So I guess synchronize your watches if you want to tune into that. And I guess that's the we're looking at the... what is that exactly?
The concept. But they've been so true to form in taking many of those concept details through to the road production cars that both Hyundai and Kia, funnily enough, that I think that they won't be far away from little mini EV EV9.
Yeah, I tell you, it's giving me causing me to pause on my EV my Volvo EX30.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. I like how this looks. You know, I want to see the solid production version of it. But, I'm starting to say maybe this would be better in the garage than the EX30. So we'll see when it comes out. And also their roadmap for deliveries and so forth and the different options. But, I think it's going to really bite into the EX30s sales.
I agree with you. Yep. And I think I might have even mentioned that something about that before. I'm just kind of thinking. I'm not sure if I said out loud here on the show or not, but that's kind of been, I've been thinking the Kia EV3 is kind of right in that whole $35,000 compact SUV kind of thing. And it's It looks so chunky. It's kind of cute. Same. It's got similar, you know, similar chunkiness as the EX30. I feel like, but with maybe a little extra chunk. I don't know.
Yeah. Oh, I don't know what I did there, but let's not do it again.
Yeah. But that looks super cool. I mean, I would definitely like to roll in that. So let's see. You know, I'm definitely got my eye on this one for sure.
Andrew Malman says he hopes it's coming here. His wife would like that. Tim says, good morning from storm ravaged Houston, Texas. Oh, you get a big storm down there. Friday morning, when we were talking here Friday morning, and you know, it was just a normal podcast like normal, Tallahassee was getting pummeled, or had been pummeled, by tornadoes. We got like two or three tornadoes come through town and just tore things up. And I had no idea. I slept through that part, and then I still had power. I did my podcast and everything. Then after the podcast, like, my power went down for like a day and a half, and it's been kind of crazy here in Tallahassee. Yeah, but anyway, so let's move along. Tom, you published a video of a factory tour at United Chargers, our sponsor, where you go through their facility up there in the greater Toronto area with founder and CEO, Gleb Nikiforov. I need to learn how to say his last name
properly. Nikiforov.
Nikiforov, okay, good. So you talk to engineers and other employees, and I know you got a fair amount of insight into various aspects of what to do there. But what were the things that kind of stood out to you? It seemed like they made a fair amount of changes and improvements to their chargers over time, and they were going to go into some of that.
Yeah. So, I mean, the interesting thing, one of the reasons why I wanted to go up there, and honestly, it wasn't because they're our sponsor. Number one, it's close to me up in Ontario. It was a really short flight. And I visit factories of other manufacturers too. So, you know, it made sense for me to go up there. And this is something that Gleb and I actually talked about for the last like 2 years. Like, he's like, I got to have you up here one of these days. But now is the time. I mean, they built out this new factory. It's 36,000 square feet. It's huge, up in Canada. And what was interesting to me was most of these manufacturers, the charging equipment manufacturers, are partnering with companies or contracting in Asia to build the units, in China and Hong Kong and Thailand and different places around the world. It's part of the reason why when I do my key features review, I always list where the charger's manufactured, because a lot of people are interested in that. A lot of people want to know where it's made. And, you know, I make it a point to tell everybody where the unit's manufactured. But it's interesting that United Charger decided to invest so much and build out the factory in Canada. There's not a lot of people doing that, building in North America, especially. Right. It's such a competitive market. So I just wanted to head up there and see, you know, what they were doing. And they have a couple of big announcements that they really pretty much just made with my factory tour, that the 80 amp Grizzly Ultimate was just got UL approval. And it was going to go for sale. It's been actually ready for 4 or 5 months, but Gleb didn't want to put it on the market until it had UL approval. And it's certified now. It's UL certified. And then while I was there, they I don't think they were planning on talking about the new Grizzly Mini, that finally got UL approval. That he had been, I guess I would assume that they had to change something, because it was trying to get UL approval for a while. And, you know, so, you know, when it takes long like that, UL might have found something that they said, you know what, change this little thing here and send it back to us. And because, you know, that's been under UL testing for a while, but that got UL certified now too. And kind of right at the end of the video, he whipped that out. I wasn't even ready for that. I didn't expect him to talk about the Mini. So that's going to be coming out soon. He hasn't sent me a Mini yet, because I don't think they even started manufacturing the UL certified units, or they just began. But I do have a Grizzly Ultimate, the 80 amp Ultimate, here in the garage, and I'm going to review it soon. But the 80 amp units are difficult for me, because I have to physically do electrical work in my garage to connect them. And so it makes it harder than just plugging in a unit and doing a review. I just can't whip out an 80 amp unit and start using it. So I actually have to modify the garage a little bit more again now, even though I thought I was done modifying it. I should have thought about this last year when I did all the modifications, to have it set up so I can more easily review 80 amp charger. So I had to buy a new transfer switch, and I have a contractor coming over to install it in the garage so I can more easily hook up and disconnect high powered chargers and start reviewing them. So anyway, getting back to United Chargers, what was interesting is that their assembly line is, you know, has more, let's say, human work and interaction than some of the other factories that I've been to. Right. You know, so I mean, he's got a bunch of people there in a line physically working on each unit, whereas I know a lot of other charging equipment is made in assembly lines where a lot of the processes are automatic and you know, or automated. But Gleb's got a whole bunch of people up there. He's employing a lot of people, and they're making these things by hand. And I kind of like that, you know. So yeah. You know, and he's you know, has this big factory up there, is employing a lot of people. It's kind of like a you know, pulling himself up by his bootstraps kind of guy. You know, he's not like this polished you know, executive. He's just like, you know, we're gonna make charging equipment. I'm gonna change the world. And I like that with him. He's an interesting guy. If you watch the video, you'll get that feeling from him. That, like, he's like, I'm going to beat all these big guys. You know, I don't need their technology and their big factories. Like, I'm going to keep hiring people, and we're just going to keep building them here. And you know, we're going to change the world, which is kind of cool.
Yeah, I think so. I think so too. I haven't met Gleb yet, but, you know, I love watching him on camera with you. Right on.
He's so enthusiastic. Like, yeah. You know, I mean, he really, I could tell he gets worked up about, like, you know, expanding and selling more and helping a public charging. Because one of the big things about the new 80 amp unit is what Gleb really hopes that is that it becomes utilized for public AC charging, high powered public AC charging. Because he talked about how in a lot of areas are underserved with DC fast charging, how you can't get the power, and where in a lot of areas, DC fast charging just doesn't make sense. You don't need a DC fast charger in some areas where cars dwell for you know, maybe right. not overnight, but right. for 3 or 4 hours. So, you know, if your car's parked for 3 or 4 hours, you certainly can't plug into a DC fast charger and walk away for 4 hours. But if you had an 80 amp charger there, now you can, and if the car can accept it, you could really pump a lot of power into it. And so the software, I don't think it's finished yet, but he's going to have software for this that will allow you to use it as public chargers, you know, have pay systems in place. And, you know, depending on the software, it can even power share. Out of the box, it can't power share by itself, but it's designed to work with other software. It's OCPP compliant, where if the software allows for power sharing, that's where all the power sharing is done, then it can do that. So, you know, he's really trying to make this as much for individual garages, but for public use too. Right. At low cost. I left out a huge part of it. Part of the big problem we have with public AC infrastructure is it's so expensive. For instance, like, you know, ChargePoint, they're the largest installer, have the biggest network of level 2 AC chargers. You know, a dual head charge point, I forget what it's called,
the CPE 250.
Not the CPE 250, the big ones with the number. It's like 6,000. It's
okay.
They cost like $6,000 or $7,000, and then the management fee, they take 10%, 5% or 10% of your overall take, and then it's also like $280 a year, I think, per head, just to have the software. So it's impossible to make money on level 2 charging through software. Kyle's got it there. The CT6000 is what I was talking about. 6,000. That's right. The new one. And I had a CT4000 at my restaurant for years, but the new one's a CT6000. It's impossible. How much money it costs to install, and then manage. So what Gleb's talking about, look, I'm going to sell these things for $699 as opposed to $6,999. You know,
80 amp charger.
Yes,
$699.
$699, and have very low management fees, like, you know, software fees and stuff like that. And mm-hmm. and so that's what he's hoping to really have this thing, you know, proliferate in the AC space. I mean, think about it. I had a a 24 kilowatt DC fast charger at my restaurant also. And that was a DC fast charger, required a step up transformer. It costs like $20,000 to install, right? And it can deliver 24 kilowatts. This thing can deliver almost 20 kilowatts, and you can buy it for $700. And you don't need to install a step-up transformer or anything like that. You could put a row of these in like shopping centers and stuff like that, and have the software so they can power share. And you know, it's going to be big. We often, I think, talk a lot about DC fast charging and how important it is for travel, which it is. You know, for long distance travel, we absolutely need it. But let me tell you something: AC charging is more important. It really is. Yeah. Because that's what people are going to use every day. And so, you know, we need more solutions. Is this the one? So Gleb really is billing it as like, this is it. This is what's going to proliferate. This is what we're, you know, the ultimate is, I named it the ultimate because this is the best public charger or ADM charger you're ever going to see. Is that the case? I don't know, but it's a good price. And, it's good equipment and it's very robust. The one thing about United Chargers is, yeah, you could knock them all you want, but they make really robust equipment. Yeah. I mean, you could beat the hell out of that thing. It's one of the most strongest outer casings. The cables, while I've knocked them in the past for not being as flexible as some of the other cables I have, but it's because it's got a thick rubberized jacket on the outside that it's a thick cable, and it's almost made for public use more so than in your garage. You could run over with a car. You could really abuse it, and it stands up. It stands up to the abuse, which is what you need in public places.
He talked about that in your video a little bit. The cable thickness with the new one, it has to be thick enough or thin enough.
Yeah.
Because there's another wire inside, so they didn't want it to flex too much, or it could possibly break that other wire inside.
Well, it's a balance. It's always a balance. And and the reason why he brought that up, because honestly, it's been a point of contention between us. Like, I've criticized his cables and say they need to be more flexible, and he's like, Tom, you don't understand. My cables are the reason why they're not more flexible is because they are strong, and if we make them weaker, they will break. You know, so we've gone back and forth on that, and that's why if you watch that little segment, when I start talking about cable, he jumps right in, because that's Gleb. He's like his competitive. He's like, no, like, this is the right balance of thickness and flexibility.
All right.
So yeah, he's a character. I like Gleb. He's a really good guy. And he really genuinely, I think, you know, he talks a lot about wanting to help the industry. I mean, he's in it to make money. Let's face it. That's why people go in business. Sure. But if you talk to him, he kind of says he's not. He's like, I just want to see electrification proliferate, which is, it's good to hear him say that, you know, but I mean, at the end of the day, you have to make money.
So we're looking at on the video here now, we're looking at on YouTube. That's the mini.
Yeah.
So what really, can you give us a break of what that is really quick?
Yeah. It's a portable 40 amp charger. Okay, and the one cool thing about it is, you see that he's going to sell it with everything. Because I asked him, are you just going to sell the unit at a lower price and then charge extra for these, you know, which is what almost every other portable charger does. They don't give you them. He said, nope. He said, this is going to come with this. Everything's going to be included. You're going to get all these adapters and it's all coming with the unit. So, I can't wait to review that, because so many people ask me about portable units, and there's so few good ones on the market that I hate to say it, but I like punt the question, because the J Booster Plus, which I have over here, is fantastic. But it's expensive. It's $700. So it's so hard for me to tell people, yeah, spend $700 to put something in your trunk that you might use if you need to on the road. Because a lot of people say, I just want to put something in the trunk, something that I know I have in case I need something. And that doesn't come with the full contingent of adapters. You have to pay extra for them. So many of the other portable charging equipment that I've reviewed is low quality stuff coming from kind of no name brands. There's a couple. The Webasto is a nice unit, but they also don't have the best reliability record. A lot of my followers get back to me and say, look, the Webasto unit, you recommended it. It worked great until it didn't. Oh. And, you know, and so that Electron makes a decent portable unit, but so many of the other ones, you see the reviews that I did here, where I'm like, I can't recommend this. It's garbage. And most of them are, and most of them are cheap, like $200 or something like that. Don't go to Amazon and just buy a cheap portable charger, because I'm telling you, like the must start, I mean, I call it the must melt, because if you use that enough, it's going to melt. It's garbage. So hopefully, let me put this one through the ringer, but Gleb's got a history of making high-quality equipment, and once I get a hold of it, hopefully I'll be able to offer this one and say, look, you want a portable unit for $399, you get a carrying case with all the adapters of Man. All the outlets that you're going to find on the road.
So. That's a deal. That is a deal. Hey, so
before we move on, yep. That's one of the things that I find very interesting. If you notice, United Chargers prices are very low. They're mm-hmm. they're very reasonable. I mean, you could buy the Grizzly Classic 40 amp charger for $349, I think it is now. Like, okay. You know, $350. The Smart is like $389. So they're very, very competitive pricing, right? But he's manufacturing in Canada. Right. So that a whole argument about we need to manufacture in Asia to be competitively priced.
Right.
Because that's what you hear from the company. When I ask these other companies, well, why do you make these in China? Why do you make them in Hong Kong? Well, we can't manufacture here in the U.S. It'll cost too much. Right. You know, and but somehow Gleb's figured out how to do it up in Canada and be actually not just be competitive, but be lower priced than the comparable companies. Mm. Now, one of the things that I will say is that Gleb does work on tight margins, and mm-hmm. he doesn't like all these other companies will work with third parties to like sell their products and give them a cut, like distributors, right. and he doesn't do that. Like he won't let, because I'm actually setting up. I have a website now, evchargingstations.com. I haven't really talked about it much, but I'm going to be putting all my videos on that site and allowing people to click through and purchase the equipment and directly from my reviews. And some of the some companies that offer these services that will like set up web pages for you, and they have deals with all these charging manufacturers. So I don't have to do any work. Basically, I could just put my skin on the website, click through. They'll get a cut of it, obviously. Gleb doesn't work with any of those companies because right. he's like, I'm not giving them a percentage. You know, I'm going to just sell direct. So, yeah. You know, which is cool. And that's probably part of the reason why his vehicles are, his units are very competitively priced.
Right. All right. So,
before we moved on again. So David WS says, Tom, most vehicles do not have 19.2 onboard charger.
Right.
You know, these are EVSEs, not chargers. I'm not going down the EVSE road. we've done that many times. Yeah. I think most people know that, but in any right. event, the thing about the Grizzly Ultimate, like most EVSE, not all, but most, you just dial down the power with an internal dip switch. So let's say you don't have a 100 amp feed in your house. You only have a 60 amp feed. You just dial the internal dip switch down to 48 amps right. and it'll limit it to 48 amps if you have a 60 amp feed, but then you have that available power. Let's say in the future you do a service upgrade and you want to have 100 amps going to it. Then you just tune it back up. So at $699, it's so competitively priced. There are plenty of 48 amp chargers that cost $699 or more. So why not just get the full 80 amps? You might use it in the future. So
right. Go ahead, Martin.
I was going to bring up John's question a bit, which is about your electrical solution there, Tom. John was asking, are you running a separate 100 amp breaker to test an 80 amp charger? How does that just briefly work in terms of the sort of logistics of it all?
Yeah, so I have a 100 amp feed for the Ford Charge Station Pro already, and I have a disconnect switch. So basically what I'm going to be doing is replacing the disconnect with a three-way disconnect. So I'll be able to throw a switch and power Ford Charge Station Pro, put it in the middle and power nothing, or push it up and power the other feed So what I'll have is like a 20-foot cable, you know, number four wire, or what size it right for the 80 amps. And that will just be kind of, you know, coiled up in the garage. And when I need to review one of these, I'll turn the power off completely, hook up the charger with the cable, hang it on the wall, do the review, then kill the power, disconnect it, and flip and turn back on the Ford Charge Station Pro. So I wouldn't be able to use Ford Charge Station Pro while I'm reviewing a new a charger, which is fine because quite honestly, half the time I use the universal wall connector to charge my Rivian and my my Lightning. You know, it's I only use this when I need to pump a lot of power into it quickly.
Cool.
Hey guys,
it's good tonight.
Hey Kyle. Hey Jordan.
Hello there.
You joined us from the interior of the Chevrolet Silverado EV. That's what I told everybody you were anyway.
Yes, that's where we are.
How do you like it? You can't give us driving impressions. Those are under embargo, but you're enjoying the cabin of the RST?
Yeah, I still haven't driven it yet. Jordan's been driving it this whole time, okay. So he can't give you driving impressions. I haven't driven it.
Okay.
So, yeah, we're just cruising in this thing today. We are going to do a little towing demonstration in a little bit. Everyone's out drag racing them at the moment using the wide open watch feature, which is pretty interesting. But we skipped that because we're like, okay, it's a truck. We can also just do that at a traffic light. So we figured we would just join you guys here and not be safe.
Well, you joined us you joined us just in time for our Grizzly giveaway little segment, Tom. So we talked about this. We have a unit that we can give away.
Oh, yeah. Before we jump into that, we are going to give away an 80-amp United Chargers Grizzle E Ultimate. So what we want you to do is shoot us an email, and Dom's going to tell you what the email address is. I'm not sure if you're setting up a different email address just for this or if you're going to use the one we've used before. But you'll shoot us an email and just tell us why you need a charger. You know, we want to find somebody that needs one, you know, not just, oh yeah, I've got three of them, but I want a fourth, you know? So, well, if you have four EVs, then maybe, but, you know, let us know why, you know, you need a charger and why you're not buying one. The four of us will take a look at all the emails in a few weeks and we'll pull a winner. So, Dom, what email address should they send that to?
So, Martin, what email address should we send that to?
I love that you bounced.
You can tell we planned this.
Yeah. It's all carefully choreographed, this whole show.
So if you go to the website, batterycleanpodcast.com, you can find the contact us link straight on there. That also has links to all of our other various places as well that you can follow us on.
So maybe just put Grizzly E giveaway in the subject line, and we'll figure it out. Yeah. And I'll put a little label on them. And we can work that out.
Wonderful. Cool.
All right. And so to be clear really quickly, so the Grizzly E Ultimate, that's an 80-amp charger. So the vehicles that can really take full advantage of that are vehicles that have onboard 20 kilowatt charging, basically, right?
Yeah, that have 80-amp onboard chargers. But honestly, don't confuse people with thinking that if you don't have an 80 amp onboard charger or dual 40 amp onboard chargers, these can work on any EV. You know, it's just you would dial down you wouldn't even have to dial down. If you have a 100 amp feed, you could leave it as an 80 amp charger and charge a car that can only accept 32 or 48 amps. The car always dictates how much power it takes in. You can't, like, it would never, a more powerful charger would never hurt an EV. You know, because the car always says, wait a minute, I can only take 48 amps, only give me 48 amps, even if the charger can accept more, that can deliver more.
Awesome. All right. That's that. Then Kyle, let's, I guess, move along. I don't know if we want to say anything more about that. Anything else we want to add?
No, let's jump over to these guys because they're probably trying to say what they have to say and then leave.
So, Kyle, you spent most of this past week in Germany, actually driving a refreshed Porsche Taycan Sport Turismo or Cross Turismo. I think it was Sport, right? No, Cross.
Sport Turismo.
Sport Turismo. Okay. So, you put it through the usual out-of-spec tests, like range tests and 10% challenge. I think you may have done some charging. So this the new Taycan has more power, more range, faster charging, and even the base spec gets the adaptive air suspension, if I, at least in this market. I'm not sure if the German one. Okay, yes. Awesome. So, but before we get into those details at all, like spending this much time, is it the, what do you think of the actual driving experience? And also, what's it like to share a hotel room with your car?
Right. Well, the car, you know, previous Taycan was already the benchmark in many cases. It was, you know, one of the fastest road tripping EVs. It was right up there with Lucid. It had incredible charging performance. It had incredible driving performance. And, well, you know, they went through and did a huge technical update for 2025. We have videos. We've already range tested the car. We've done a lot of stuff with it already, but I really wanted to use it in Germany, which is where you can stress the cars. High speed, high charging power, great infrastructure, great roads. And so I basically did 5,000 kilometers all around the country, really pushing it to the limits every day. And it was really, of course, yeah, it was a test of the Taycan, but it's also a test of the benchmark of electric. So it's unbelievable. The thermal management is seriously improved from the previous car. You know, just you're able to sit at full speed all day, no issues, charging stop after charging stop, where the previous car would overheat pretty quickly. And it's amazing. The suspension, this one was equipped not only with the base air suspension, but with the $7,000 roughly Porsche Active Ride suspension, which is like a four motor 20 kilowatt suspension system, which is crazy. And that was unbelievable to experience, really neat. And it, you know, it's just, it was great, as you would expect. And so it's the fastest road tripping EV we've ever tested. It's the fastest charging EV we've pretty much ever tested in terms of adding energy over time. I need to look at it compared to like a Hummer EV or this Silverado, but it's right up there. It sits at well over 300 kilowatts to 65%. Just unbelievable charging performance. And yeah, I mean, the car that I drove, it was a 4S, but it was spec'd to almost 200,000 euros. I mean, it had literally almost everything on it, which is crazy. Our US pricing is a little bit less expensive than the Euro cars are. But the new 4S is like the old turbo in terms of performance. Nears makes no difference. So this thing was fast, did everything I needed it to do. It was a great car to test.
So how'd it do with range? You put down 70 mile, was it 70 mile an hour range test somehow on the Autobahn?
Yeah, exactly. The Sport Turismo is not as efficient as I would like it to be. It did right. 310 miles or 311 miles, just over 500 kilometers. Right. But the sedan would do a lot better. So the sedan would probably be in the 340 range, somewhere around there. And when you factor in that, even in this car, which isn't as efficient as the sedan, 10 minutes of charging gets you over 2 hours of driving at 70 miles per hour. What more do you need, in my opinion? It's crazy.
Right, right. That sounds pretty good. Yeah. Let's see. So how did it do on the 10% challenge too? So before we do that, though, maybe just remind us what the 10% challenge entails.
Yeah, I think we've already discussed it's the fastest road tripping EV we've ever tested. The 10% challenge simulates a road tripping situation where you arrive to a DC fast charger at 10% state of charge. You charge for 15 minutes and see how far you can go at 80 miles an hour, which is a typical cruising speed in the US for road tripping. And this one, just another step change in performance. 140, almost 160 miles, I think, 150 something for charging for 15 minutes and driving, again, high-speed highway cruising. So very impressive. And yeah, I mean, ultimately, everyone will get the idea. The old Taycan was already the benchmark in many ways, and this is just so improved over the previous car, and most automakers still can't even match what the current car could do.
Right, right. Maybe Kia came with that Ioniq 5N. I don't know. Did you see that video this week with Misha on the Nürburgring?
Yeah, but that's more for performance. The Ioniq 5N is not going to be nearly as good of a road tripper as this, because it's going to be so much more inefficient and it charges so much slower. This is charging 100 kilowatts faster and for longer than the Ioniq 5.
Wow. Okay. I didn't quite put all that together in my head, but that's definitely impressive.
Can I ask you, there's a couple of red lights on that Ionity charging station. So can I ask you how you found the charging experience this time when you were over here in Europe?
Yeah, it definitely wasn't. So I try and go to Europe, quite often. And this was the one trip where I've noticed the most amount of charging issues, mostly with Ionity. They just a couple stations down, screens dead. And these are mostly the tritium units, which they're out of business now. So what's going to happen? I don't know. They're definitely installing some Alpitronic hyperchargers, the Hyper 400s.
Those are lovely.
But everyone that I found is force split to 200 kilowatts out of each cable. But I'm like,
Someone's cheaping out. Yeah, it's getting cheap on that.
But there's no reason to. It's just a software setting. So it's weird because they could just do 400 kilowatts on one. If another car shows up, then split. Makes not much sense.
Right. So it's not dynamically balanced then.
Correct. That's just the Ionity implementation. The stations support them physically, but I don't know why they have not chosen to do that.
That's weird.
But still really impressive when you see your videos and you were charging that Taycan, and admittedly, it wasn't a performance run and things like that, but some of the time the fans aren't even on. I mean, they are some of the time, but the engineering that Porsche engineers have done with that thermal management is what I took away from your videos, which was, wow, this isn't at its limit. You're not stress testing it. I don't know whether you did some top speed runs. I didn't see those, but that was what I took away, was, wow, this car doesn't even seem like it's on the edge.
Yeah, I have a 1,000-kilometer run that I'll post sometime or later this weekend or next week. So still more videos to come with this one. And it's just a nice week to do a lot of driving and to sort of get my head around, okay, what does the Taycan do in its home turf? And what I really want to do is, of course, get a Lucid Grand Touring with the new refresh that they're doing for this year, with some better thermal management and some other things, get a Model S and this one, and do sort of a Race to Vegas style, but in a place where you can actually rip, which would be really fun. Maybe we even throw a Neo in there with some battery swapping. Could be cool. I think the Taycan makes the best case against battery swapping. So this is interesting. And yeah, lot of stuff to dig into here. But overall, great trip. Drove some other stuff as well. Videos coming, and did Twizzy things, just little fun things. It was great.
Oh, right. And Twizzy things, right?
Yeah, it's great. Yep.
Yes, I saw that. That's on your, probably on your Twitter feed, I guess. There's a little video of you driving or riding in a Twizy.
Yeah, driving it around. It was fun. It was a tuned one, pretty quick. It was great.
Oh, it was tuned. And on public streets too, where legally and everything.
Right. They're, of course, they're legal to be registered.
Right. Because you own, I just mentioned that because you own a Twizy, but I don't know if it's really licensed for the road up there.
We're not going to talk about it.
Okay.
You might see it on the road. Other way.
I mean, I drove it in the parking lot. That's not a public road. You're allowed to do that. And I've seen you drive it in the parking lot. But anyway, yeah. So anything else go on up there that you want to mention or talk about?
No, I think that's kind of it. Just a nice trip. Yep.
Fancy hotel. That was pretty awesome, that hotel, man. So there's an elevator for the car, basically?
Yeah, you put the car in your hotel room, basically. It was sick.
Man, they do that with gas cars too?
Oh yeah, because it's opened. It's on the balcony.
Oh, right. Okay. Cool.
Mm-hmm. In fact, I wouldn't be surprised if it's one of those stupid things that somebody who has to make rules gets all their knickers in a twist about electric vehicles. We saw that in a recent story this week. Somebody turned up to take their son to hospital, and the hospital car park said, "We don't take EVs because they burn up." And you're like, "Okay, well that's not true." And someone somewhere who pushes a pen for a living has made that rule. So so first of all, can we not be idiots about this? But I hope that continues. EVs are enormously safe. You can have them in your hotel room. I would prefer that than a tank of gasoline. But it's all very safe anyway because the car is on the balcony. Yeah. But very cool. Did Porsche book you in for that, or was that did you hunt that one down?
Yeah, but the whole trip wasn't done by Porsche at all. So yeah, I flew myself over there. I just went to go on vacation, basically, to go film in Germany, get some videos in. And I just was like, that's a cool hotel. I'm going to go book that. It was only a couple $100. It was like $214 with tax, which is not bad. It's not like I spent a lot of money on it. It was pretty average.
Yeah. I mean, price-wise, considering, that you're it's pretty awesome to have your car right there in your room, basically.
I mean, we have to go to Las Vegas for ACT this week, and like the crappiest hotel rooms cost significantly more, which Jordan, don't forget to book the hotels. seriously.
Hey, Jordan, I don't know if you wanted to talk about the EQE this week, but you were driving that. Did you enjoy it?
That was a few weeks ago, and it was fine. Not much to report on. We've just been catching up on videos. What's way more important is what went up 16 minutes ago, and that was the recreation of Tesla's Cybertruck towing a 911 while drag racing a 911. So that is now live. So this was we had three videos going on at the same time. So
We
had Motor Trend and Jason Vinsky from Engineering Explained, and I was really just there hanging out with the truck, and I was like, well, I'll make my own video. So had fun with it.
Yeah, I read about this now. I don't know if you want to talk about this like a little bit, just like tease people, let them make sure they tune into this after the podcast, because it's interesting the backstory there.
I could say the premise of the video was, Tesla showed the Cybertruck winning a drag race, and then Jason made a video on it showcasing that the footage of Tesla's drag race ended at the eighth mile, and then Elon went to say it's faster in the quarter mile. So it was kind of like clearing the air with that situation. And so we did many, many runs with lots of data, timed actual drag runs. So
It was more like locking up a manufacturer claim, because it's still crazy to watch.
It's insane.
The Cybertruck trip. But the Cybertruck was slower in the quarter mile towing a 911, but faster in the eighth mile. Yeah. And Tesla probably should have just said eighth mile, and none of this would have happened. It wasn't our idea. It was Motor Trend's idea to do all this.
Yeah, it's Motor Trend's,
To prove it, and we let them use the truck for the week. This was one of the things they wanted to do with it. I thought it was pretty cool. That's my truck going down the drag strip there.
And Motor Trend has a whole article right up about all the, the weights and all the details in there.
Yeah, they did it right. They did a really nice job. They know how to do this type of stuff really well. And it was done to the nerd level 9,000. I think, they had the truck topped up. I checked it in the app, and it was like, at 100% charge, warm after a supercharging session, everything you want.
I hyper-miled the truck to the track. I got to the track with like 96%. I think 20 miles and used like 4% or less. And then we topped the truck up with a Lightning. We had a Lightning there, and we were using the Pro Power on board to charge up the Cybertruck to get it like nice and topped up. So we gave Tesla every possible edge. I mean, even the trailer was actually lighter than the 911 going down the drag strip. So
And it wasn't at first. They had to take a bunch of like the floor mats and a bunch of stuff out of the portion of the trailer to make it lighter than the one that was doing the pulling.
Yeah, right. So Kyle wasn't there, so I put a lot more effort into this video.
Yeah, so it actually is a nice video.
We've got the Jordan drone. The drone is up. We love to see that. When we see the drone is up, you're like, we know who made this video for Outer Spec. It looks...
I don't know if Kyle knows where his drone is.
No, no idea. Yeah.
Right on. All right. So before we get into news, I just want to mention that if you have your notifications turned on for the channel, you would have seen that we published a third interview with a representative from an eVTOL company. That's an electric vertical takeoff and landing company a few days ago. So this was with Andreas Perotti. He is the chief marketing officer Europe for a company called eHang. It's an odd name, but it's one of the leading companies actually in the eVTOL space. Because it actually has craft flying now in China, where it's received regulatory approval, and it's manufacturing these by the hundreds. I believe they expect to build like 600 of them this year, between like this main one that you see behind me, and they have a cargo one as well. And they demoed this at DriftX, and there's a little bit of footage of that at the very end of this, close to the end of this video. Anyway, I just thought I'd mention that that it's up. But I know
is there most of you. Interest in VTOLs yet?
Not really, you know. So I know most of you are interested in cars, so we can get back to talking about those. But yeah, the thing is with eVTOLs, there's not really a whole lot of interest out there. There's a bunch of stuff going on, and I feel like once they start flying, it's going to like explode. Like interest in this whole space is just going to boom. But right now, you know, there's kind of crickets out there. You know, the videos don't get a lot of views.
That's
pretty cool.
My impression, it's like it's really cool to me as someone who's like into transportation. But right. Whenever I see a video about an eVTOL come across my feed, I've never clicked on one. And okay. I don't know why, because I feel like that's something I would be interested in. But
right.
It's also like, it seems so far-fetched and so, okay, we haven't really seen a real use case, a real benefit to a consumer yet. I think until people are like convinced that this is going to improve my life somehow,
right.
It's going to be this kind of crickets on this type of topic.
Right.
And we still have to get past the regulation and legislation on this stuff. Like, you know, even I know they're real and they work now. You know, we were at the point now where they actually will work. But I don't know how legislation, the regulation is going to allow these. I still don't. Maybe I'm far off in thinking this, but I just it's hard for me to imagine people getting licenses to like take these from rooftops to rooftops in cities.
You know, I have a different theory, Tom, and that is that aviation is much more controllable than road vehicles. I think everyone thinks, well, Tesla said full self-driving was coming, you know, 1,000 years ago, and no one believes Elon Musk anymore because he's the boy who cried wolf so many times. I have a theory that actually with this, it won't be, you know, we're all flying our own aircraft, but I think if a journey that takes you an hour and a half, maybe in New York City or whatever, if you're a corporate or a high net worth individual and you can do that journey in 10 or 15 minutes with a pilot, I think that's where this eVTOL takes off to begin with. Then it'll come to the rest of us to do these kind of short journeys. But because the FAA have all this experience and because there's tests they have to pass and aviation's much more controllable in terms of there's no wild cards like you're trying to do full self-driving cars and, you know, you don't know a dog's going to run out and a kid's going to chase it or something and you've got to, well, what happens there? Do you slam on the brakes or do you kill the child? All these weird hypotheticals. That doesn't happen in aviation so much because the rules are there already. So I have a different theory that actually this might come quickly, but I'm probably wrong.
Yeah, I'm just interested in how, like, you know, somebody posted a comment, you know, helicopters somehow get around. Yeah, and there's licensed helicopter pilots that fly people around. These are some things where, like, the average person would have to get a license and learn the rules and you know aviation safety, which is complex. You know, it's not simple. And, you know, I just find it hard to get that with the regulation that's going to have to be in place to make these safe, that a lot of people are then going to do it. But right. Let's see. I mean, I'd love to fly one around, but, you know, I know that the regulation is going to be very strict.
It's funny because they demoed this one and they demoed it, you know, autonomously. I think with somebody in it at DriftX. But he's still saying, like, for America, they're already flying in China, but it's going to be 10 years before EHang flies in America. But we have those other companies. We interviewed Archer Mobility and Joby, and they have more wings and they have more range. They can go like 100 miles. And they're looking at like the end of 2025, I believe, you know, to start working in the US with certification and everything. So, yeah, but I think until it really starts happening, there's, you know, interest is just people aren't super interested in it. So let's move along.
Oh, by the way, by the way, whilst I was doing that, I also added a bit to the top of our website. I call it a website. It's not really. It's a link tree, isn't it? So if you want to enter a batteryincludedpodcast.com, if you want to enter our Grizzly competition, I've put a you can tell I wasn't prepared for this. I put a little link there, so you can just click on that and enter your details. Obviously, you have to be in an area that the hardware would be useful to you. So, I mean, you're welcome to enter from wherever, but yep, I put that on there as well. So that's just the top link at batteriesincludedpodcast.com. If you want to enter our Grizzly Charger competition, just click on that. Opens a little feedback form, so you haven't got to open your you know, your email client or anything like that, and that will come straight through to us.
Sweet. Thank you, Martin. And I'll put that out on the social channels a little bit later. All right, so this week, the Kia EV6 got a bit of a refresh. So far, it's just been in the Korean market, from what I can tell. I don't know. Actually, did I didn't share any photos with you, Martin, did I? I did not.
I can find it.
Okay. Yeah, I had a hard time actually finding pictures or any information at all. Eventually, last night, I found the Korean the Kia website in Korean. They have pictures of the actual refreshed Kia EV6 on that one site, but everywhere else, we just see the there we go. Everywhere else, we just see like the old one still. Oh, there's a little special offer from Starbucks, right?
Oops, there we go.
In Korea. Right, so visually, you can see that the headlight treatment is quite different. It's now more in line with the styling of the rest of the Kia lineup. The rear has also changed a bit, but I think you'd have to be pretty familiar with the car to spot the changes there. And of course, it has like new wheels. Inside, the big screen has been changed. It's now more rectangular, but also curved. And there are a few other like visual changes in the cabin as well. They've also revised the B pillar, which is kind of like odd, you know, to see something like that structural changed in a refresh. It adds more rigidity, they say. They've also added some sound insulation around the rear motor. And let's see what else they got. They tweaked the dampers a bit. So, Jordan, I see that you did a podcast here with Francie on the Out of Spec podcast about this. We have a little bit of inception going on there. I don't know what was your big takeaway from this refresh?
I mean, definitely minor. I actually don't think I love the front fascia as much. I think the headlights are crazy, and I don't think they'll age well.
Okay.
At the same time, it's kind of on brand for Kia. Their lighting is all over the place, which is fine. They're trying to find their lighting identity. But it was fun.
That's the steering wheel. That's so ugly.
It was fun going with Francie on the website and translating everything. Me and Kyle have had some translation issues with some other sites recently.
Yeah, so the Chinese Cadillac Optic site.
Yeah. So it was fun. I mean, it was an early, video just trying to dissect what we could, but this is not North American specs. So those things that will definitely change. For our market, probably not a ton, but definitely light refresh. But the issue is just, and Francie and I commented on the fact that everyone's reporting on Kia's delivery of it, and Kia says it'll charge, such and such on a 350 kilowatt charger, and then all these reporters are like, it'll charge at 350 kilowatts.
Right.
So I don't know. Get your EV news from EV reporters, I think.
Yeah, it does not charge at 350 kilowatts.
Yeah, I know. The one article that I read said that at the end. I was like, and because it can charge at 350 kilowatts, it can go from 10 to 80% in 18 minutes. And I'm just like, sigh.
Even Sawyer Merritt's tweet mentioned 350 kilowatt charging, which is just a little. Yeah.
And he's the one who's trying to make every other EV look bad.
So I kind of like it, and I like that steering wheel. I mean, it's only slightly changed, but I don't know. I like it. So it's like all these things are kind of subjective. Kyle has like bad taste, so he doesn't like that. But I think we're going to actually learn more about this in the future. They haven't really released a worldwide press release on all the details, so there may be things that we're not aware of yet, I think, possibly. I'm not sure.
Dom, but before for the next topic, I want to hear what Kyle has to say about the Silverado.
Yeah, that's
okay. True. I know you can't talk about driving impressions, but there's got to be stuff you can tell us about it.
Yeah, well, so we've done a bunch with the Silverado EV work truck, and we've driven that vehicle across the country. We have, what else have we done with the Silverado EV work truck? Everything, really.
Yeah, towed
it.
Track time.
We took it to a racetrack and a track day in it. We've done that. Video still hasn't gone up
real
yet.
Consumer advice. You should probably just give me that footage.
I really should, because that was hilarious going around the track in the Silverado. And so here we have now the consumer version. This is called the RST, which is sort of the top spec, and this is the first edition, which means it has everything. So now you have air suspension, adaptive damper, 24-inch wheels,
rear wheel steering,
folding mid gate.
Yeah. do you want 24 inch wheels or 18s? There's nothing in between.
Those are your options. Work truck 18 or 24 here, but there's more variants coming.
Yeah.
There will be an LT. Right. There will be a
Trail Boss
next year, which will be kind of cool. That's for like Colorado. But it's not going to be like hardcore off-road, but at least soft road capable. And go ahead.
I was just going to ask, do all those ones coming, would they have the mid-gate as well?
So every RST will. I think it might be an optional extra on the other ones.
Okay. Right.
Yeah, we'll have to look at the exact spec. But, you know, it's got the 24 module pack, so 215-ish kilowatt hour usable. You know, big boy charging, almost 380 kilowatts maximum, and it holds it for a long time. It's, you know, definitely only 10 miles less range than the work truck, actually, which I'm really surprised at, going from the 18-inch wheels to the 24-inch wheels, 440 miles in the EPA cycle on this one. You know, we've really done quite a bit with this battery pack. It's pretty stout. It loves to charge, and they fixed a lot of the weird charging issues with it now. It just kind of sits flat out now that we know how to get it fully dialed. Does have some thermal issues from time to time. This one has Super Cruise. I can't talk about how it works, but at least you can have lane centering now. And yeah, I mean, it's really a truck that does what I need a truck to do, which is to tow long distance. And we haven't done it yet, but we're actually driving over. This is our pit stop to join you guys, but we're driving over to do some towing with the RST, which I'm really looking forward to seeing how the air suspension and adaptive damper handle the towing versus just the static suspension, or I should say non-adaptive suspension that was in the work truck version, which crushed it in our rustic ring towing challenge. So yeah, it's cool. It's a cool truck, no question.
Yeah, I mean the work truck did really good in all your tests basically, and you know, people love the way it looks. This 24 inch wheel, so not a whole lot of sidewall going on, people are pointing out as well, you know, so that's, you know, it's got to affect the ride quality and all that. I mean, you can't talk about driving impressions yet, I guess, but I mean, just looking, I mean, they look so much better personally, but you know, you got to wonder.
They run 68 PSI in the rear.
Ooh, that's a lot.
And 62 up front, 61 up front. I'll make sure it gets in the full video.
Interesting. Well, it's going to have, Yeah, I'm looking forward to see. So when do impressions drop? When can we look forward to all the info?
Today, and then we're also driving the Equinox EV as well.
Yeah, oh, that's so true. That's right. Right.
A week from yesterday, we can do these impressions.
Oh, yeah. So and Thursday.
Two weeks from yesterday will be Equinox EV.
Great. Okay. So next week, we'll talk about the Silverado EV in more depth, I guess. And then 2 weeks from then, the Equinox EV. That sounds really great.
Am I right in thinking Equinox has now got customer deliveries beginning?
Yeah, or at least they're getting to dealers.
Brilliant news. That's such an exciting time.
We probably should have just gone to our local Chevy dealer and borrowed these cars, and then we wouldn't have to wait for the embargo to lift.
I mean, I think they're just on trucks now, because I looked at cars.com yesterday or the day before, and there were like six on the site, and they weren't at dealers yet, I don't think. You know, they're just like on the way, so dealers are putting up, okay, we got these cars coming, but I don't think they've really reached dealers. Maybe this weekend they'll start trickling on to some.
Oh, there we go. Nebula says, yeah, they are. That's why it's so exciting, because this is the, you know, latest, greatest technology at a price, well, one LT with federal tax credit, add on some destinations, what, $27,000-$28,000. And so that's the headline, and obviously you go up from there, but still that's the entry point, and that's why it's such an exciting vehicle, because it's going to bring a lot of people into a more modern day electric vehicle experience. We haven't got to keep saying, well, you want a cheap EV, then ugly. You know. Yeah, well. Okay.
But that's in my personal opinion.
Alahum is asking.
Blazer looks decent. Actually.
Yeah, Blazer. We could talk about Blazer. Oh, yeah. I had never been in a Blazer until yesterday.
Okay.
That was our ride like all day.
Yeah, we were in one from the airport to the dinner thing. I don't know. And that, depending on spec, can make your day worse.
Oh, why?
It's just, I don't even know how to describe it.
None of ours had the glass roof. It felt a little claustrophobic. You know, the glass gets thinner and thinner as you go back in the car. Don't love the air conditioning. The ride's a bit bumpy in the back. It was so bumpy that it knocked my AirPods out of my pocket, and now they're gone. I don't know. On maps, it tells me they're in some neighborhood in Detroit.
But up front, it was fine. Oh, no. Front seats were good. yeah, I mean, it was cool. I mean, it seemed, it was like, okay, let's get some lighter materials in here. Yeah. Everything is black.
It is funny. So the Blazer and I think the Equinox have a class leading 17.7 green, whereas the Silverado has a 17.7 inch green, not class leading.
Not class leading anymore because of Cybertruck. So yeah, I mean, I actually thought, I thought the Blazer was cool. I think it looks amazing from the outside. Personally, the Blazer looks awesome. But doesn't like a maxed out Equinox equal a Blazer?
I think that goes up to about 45 grand, and then I think the Blazer should start at about 40. It should be on screen.
No, that's a nice 40... one for 47.
Oh, okay, right, okay. That's all wheel drive.
What's weird is you can't get the big battery and all wheel drive. So if you want all wheel drive, you have to get the small battery. I got to ask them about that.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you want that one, which is 48. Yeah, we did a battery bargain show midweek, and we had one of our listeners saying a budget was around 50. Like, do I go top end Equinox or get into a Blazer? And Dom, you were saying, well, Blazer, kind of obviously, or maybe it's not obvious, but I thought it was a good point.
Yeah, so Blazer looks cool. I would say riding in it was totally fine yesterday. I sat up front, really enjoyed that, actually. The back seat was not my cup of tea, but I had plenty of room. I just didn't like the ride in the back. And it has the most uncomfortable rear seat. That feels like you're sitting on, like, a jacket behind you
There's
or something.
There's a weird bar at the lowest end of your back.
Yeah. Anyway, it's got the same battery as Lyric in the big battery one and the same battery as Prologue in the small battery one, so charging performance is not good. Okay, well, that was cool. I mean, at least I got to ride when we got to ride in those things. Yeah. And apparently we'll have one to test and do stuff with pretty soon.
Cool, look forward to that.
And then
sorry, I was trying to share those Blazer EVs. You can find them for like around 35, starting at 35 on dealer's lots with, I think that's with the tax credit taken off already. But I mean, they get right down to where the Equinox kind of starts at, you know. And so I think when the Equinox comes out too, I think dealers may be taking a bit off the top of that. So there should be really, really good deals on those vehicles.
Max, the Blazer does not seem a lot bigger, but it is for sure bigger
than an Equinox.
Yep, the Equinox.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, I think we are going to run and do some towing with this Silverado.
All right. We're going to talk about tariffs.
Okay. See you later.
Bye.
Amazing. Yeah. Let's talk about politics and tariffs. They're gone.
Right. Which is, yeah. I mean, Kyle likes to say, you know, that he's really much a product guy. He likes, you know, cars, you know, looking at companies and maybe, you know, EV policy and different things, maybe not quite his thing so much, which I, you know, totally understand.
And one thing I want to talk about the price, Dom, we sometimes talk about, well, you know, a loaded X is the same as the, and I don't mean X like Model X, this loaded EV is the same price as this kind of baseline EV. But you know, sometimes we forget that price difference of $5,000-$6,000, let's say, between, you know, it's actually more, I think, for the Equinox, when I think it's $7,000 or $8,000. But in any event, that price difference means something to a lot of people. You know, it's not, you know, we shouldn't be so flippant sometimes and say, oh, just get the Blazer because, you know, it's only $5,000 more and it's bigger and it's this and it's that. You know, that few thousand dollars makes a big difference to a lot of people. And for a lot of people, the Equinox, I think, is going to be a better vehicle. That's just my personal view. For a lot of people, the Blazer will be. But there's a reason why the Equinox, why GM sells so many Equinox, the gas versions.
Yeah.
And it's you know, we owned one. I've talked about this on the show. We enjoyed our Equinox. We had it for like 7 or 8 years. And it was the perfect vehicle at a right price, good size. I didn't need Blazer size, so why pay for Blazer size? And if GM can manage to keep the prices, you know, as low as they can on the Equinox, that's like the entry level. Well, actually, the new Bolt EUV that comes out next year will be the entry level, but it's going to be an affordable, long-range electric vehicle for a lot of families that can't afford a Blazer.
Right. And it's a little nicer size, a little bit bigger than I believe than the Bolt as well too. So there's it's up to that that category up there as well.
Definitely bigger than the Bolt Equinox.
Yeah, it's pretty. I mean, that first drive has been going on this weekend. Have you seen our friend John Volker was posting about it a little bit? You know, and no driving impressions, but I think it sounded like he was enjoying his time with it at least, or has a just you know positive feelings about it going out there on the marketplace, which is good because GM's planning on trying to move a lot of these things. Their production numbers are going to finally start shooting upwards. They've been a little slow with the Ultium production numbers, right? And but I think that's going to supposed to be changing this year. And
it's supposed to be changing every year for the last couple of years.
True,
well, you know, I it has to at some point, but
right,
you know, the whole Ultium rollout's been a disaster for GM.
Right. Max is saying something. Max is from Max Patton from Out of Spec. He's saying she'll be shopping between EV3, EX30, and Equinox probably when it's upgrade time. Yeah, that's going to be a. I feel like our battery bargains show are going to have some emails like looking at those the segment of the market too, right? Yeah, because it's kind of an interesting space because that's where like the Kona is now and the e-Niro, but I think they might get displaced, right? Right. So this week, the Biden administration announced it's raising the tariff on Chinese electric vehicles from 25 to 100%. And not only that, it's raising tariffs on EV batteries as well from 7.5 to 25%. And the tariff rate on battery parts will increase from 7.5 to 25% in 2024. But there's more even. The tariff rate on natural graphite, which is an important part of batteries. One of the anodes is typically all graphite, and there's artificial graphite, and then there's natural graphite. So the tariff rate on natural graphite and permanent magnets, which are in permanent magnet motors, will increase from 25% to 25% in 2026. So that's a little bit slower coming in, but other materials we're trying to create, you know, a really more solid supply chain for graphite and other battery materials here in the U.S. So that's a little bit breathing room for the graphite producers, at least in this country. So I'm really curious what you guys are thinking about all this. The administration makes the argument that China is subsidizing its auto industry and basically accuses it of dumping cars. I looked at the reaction to the news on the official POTUS account, the President of the United States accounts on both XCOM and Threads. And I didn't see a whole lot of love for this decision on either site. You know, the left-leaning crowd or the right-leaning crowd, like politically, not a whole lot of love. So I just want to hear what you guys think about this. Like, Tom, maybe start with you.
Well, I think it's election year, you know, knee-jerk reaction, you know, maybe bowing to the lobbyists from the American automakers that are, you know, pushing hard because they see this inevitable tidal wave of Chinese vehicles that are going to come and seriously damage, if not kill, the U.S. auto industry at some point. You know, we've talked about this before. I've been over to China many times. Inside AV's just had a really good article up this week on Chinese EVs. They went over there and drove a whole bunch of the latest EVs. And the thing is, the vehicles, China like just leapfrogged internal combustion. They never made good internal combustion vehicles. And the truth of the matter is, yes, it is unfair competition. The government does subsidize the industry. And these companies get land and factories built for them with you know, basically government money on these super long-term loans that are ridiculously low interest rates or no interest. And it is unfair, but this isn't going to stop them from dominating the industry with electric vehicles. What could potentially stop them would be the domestic automakers doing a better job and not kicking the can down the road and saying, you know, we're going to build hybrids now for the next few years, which is what Ford and GM are basically saying now. And that, I think, is going to be more damaging than anything. And the industry is shifting. We're going to electric vehicles. You know, in a decade or so from now, you know, 75%+ of the vehicles are going to be all electric, maybe more. And this protectionism stuff, while I understand why we want to do it, because it is unfair competition, you can't, you know, it's sticking your fingers in the holes in the dam. And will it have a positive inflict over the next couple of years? Probably. It'll keep Chinese vehicles from getting in here now, but they're going to get in here, whether it's through, you know, manufacturing in Mexico or opening up factories here eventually, which, you know, is going to happen also. You know, but it's total election year stuff. You know, Biden criticized Trump for putting in tariffs mm-hmm. back
yeah, the original
when Trump
tariffs.
Was president. Mm-hmm. And now he's doing it. And, you know, he's doing it now really because it's election year. I don't think he even probably believes it's the right thing, but the you know, he's fighting for votes now. And I guess he believes the unions, he'll get more union support, at least North American automaker union support, if he's saying, look how I'm protecting you guys. I'm keeping them out. So, but that happens every election. You know, yeah. Whenever you see stuff like this get enacted, you know, within a year of the next presidential election, you have to kind of look at it and say, is this really what they wanted, or is this to buy votes? And that's what he's doing here now. You know, is it going to work? It's not going to work. It's they will get here. Phil said Chinese EVs will never get here. I guarantee it. Phil, they're gonna. And you know, I don't know how old you guys are, but I remember in the early 70s, my dad and grandfather, my grandfather in particular, talking about how he'd never buy a Japanese car because he lived through the bombing of Pearl Harbor, and how, you know, he'd never buy these cars, and no American is going to buy Japanese cars, you know, after what they did to us and so forth. And you know what, you know, decade later, all of a sudden everybody forgot about that. And you know, Toyota, Honda, Datsun first, and then turned to Nissan. They just proliferated and took an enormous market share here in North America. So everybody's saying now we won't buy Chinese EVs. I beg to differ. We're going to buy Chinese EVs, and they're going to get here whether we try to tariff them or not.
What do you think, Martin? I mean, you're over there in the UK, but you know, you get probably hear lots about the situation here for sure, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, buying a Chinese EV is. I got clobbered this morning on the school run by one of the fellow dads as I was getting in the car, and he has got the opportunity to get an EV through his workplace scheme, which is very popular here in the UK, by the way, and it's how many people do it because it's very little tax, you know, tax to pay on the benefit of having a company car. And he's like, I really love the look of the Polestar, but I don't see many of them on the roads. You're the first guy I've seen driving one. Do you mind if I ask? And he's like, they're Swedish, right? They're Volvo. And I was like, yeah, well, of course it's made in China. Do I think about where my car is made day in, day out? Of course not. I love the fact that I open up the Polestar app and it looks very Polestar and Swedish, and the choice of materials is nice. And I love the look of the car, by the way. I think it's styled incredibly well. Do I care where it's put together? No. I care about where it's put together when I have the inevitable comments on my podcast from people saying, you're supporting an awful regime, you're supporting China, I can't believe you bought a Polestar, and you know, you're basically on Mr. Xi's Christmas card list. And so that's the only time I think about it, and I have to then reply to those comments of being like, where was your mobile phone made? And if it was made not in China, where was the battery made? And where did it all come from? So and that's just me being provocative, because I'm not defending the behavior of any particular country around the world. But it, I mean, you can swim against the tide, like Tom said. You can fight against it. And you can say, I'm only going to be buying things made here in this country. I'm only going to go to the farmer's market. I'm going to buy my fruits and veggies that were grown within a 10-mile radius, because I don't like, or, you know, my food coming on the CO2 emissions. You can go as far as you want with that, but on the subject of Chinese cars coming, they are coming. And putting 100% tariff on EVs, which builds on Trump's, was it 20 or 25%, and they've added another, it's gone to 102.5 or 70%.
Right, right.
It makes no difference today. So it's performative politics today. in an election year to support the union, support the beleaguered US EV industry, because she's having a bit of a tough time at the minute. It affects nothing today, but down the road, will companies like BYD want to have factories in Mexico and build cars? Because they might be sold in Mexico.
They sell BYD in Mexico.
Mm-hmm. Right, and they'll have production in Mexico. And will those vehicles be sold into the United States? Honestly, people make a really big deal about where your stuff is built and come from, and you've got to have a very strong moral stance to swim against that tide. Stronger than I've got. Like, I just enjoy driving the car, and I don't know when my iPad was made, but I enjoy using it. And you know, you've got to get to a particularly big threshold, like Tom says, with the Japanese cars and people of a certain generation. You know, I have to get to a certain threshold before I won't buy products from a certain company or a certain country, or stand up, you know, vote with my own, you know, with my wallet to stand up my beliefs. I don't think Chinese EVs cross that threshold for many people, because they're in many cases so good.
Right.
They're not just crap knockoffs of Western cars now. I mean, they're genuinely, really, the domestic Chinese cars, which might never be sold outside of China, you know, obviously got the ones that are exporting to Western places like XPeng and BYD and NIO, and we have them here in Europe, but even the domestic Chinese brands, which are never going to leave Chinese soil, are genuinely very, very good. And so a lot of people, I think, talk a big game at the minute with their mouth, but I think when it comes to you buying the best car you can get in 5 or 10 years, you might be surprised how much China's got to do with it.
Yeah. I've been sharing some of the, so everyone in the comments has a lot of opinions, and there's a lot of, I mean, yeah, there's not a lot of love for them here either, you know. I think there's a few people who are okay with it, but you know, a lot of, you know, everybody subsidizes their industry, their auto industry, and it's true. Like some of the numbers, well, we spent billions and billions of dollars bailing out our domestic manufacturers back in, was it 2010, was it, you know, and then since then, I mean, since 2008, we've offered $7,500 back to consumers who buy plug-in vehicles, and that's kind of similar to what China has done. Their main subsidy, I think, over the last 11 years, they have one program that's you know, gives customers a like $2,400. It's just a whole lot more Chinese customers bought EVs, so that number is ballooned. That amount of subsidy is a lot huger because, you know, they've sold millions of EVs in their country, where we haven't. You know, they haven't really taken off like that here.
I've seen someone in the comments saying the US needs to be smarter and make, you know, and better EVs, and you can have that debate about the US car industry, but let's remember, China is a country where people will come into the reception of your workplace, mm-hmm, with boxes and boxes of locally made phones, and at stellar subsidized prices, and you are now being encouraged to trade in your iPhone, mm-hmm, even though it might have, you know, have something to do with China, but a Western brand phone. So you might have your Western brand phone, like an iPhone, an Apple iPhone, and it's a no-brainer. You trade in your Apple iPhone and you get a Chinese, domestically made China brand, because it's subsidized so extensively that, and I'm sure that if there's officials in your reception of your workplace saying, we think you should use a Chinese phone, and you can come and trade in your Western brand one, it's subsidized, you know, it's a much better phone, it's going to cost this. I'm not sure I'd want to say no to that, by the way, if I was in China. I'm not sure I want to be on the record of having, hey, no thanks to the offer. How are you going to say yes to that offer when they're there in their, I don't know, their uniform or whatever? So this is the country that is taking that, as Tom says, like, Tom barely scratched the surface on Chinese subsidies. Yeah, I mean, there's the big stuff, like the loans for the factories to the car makers, but everything from procurement to any Chinese department, like the US could go to that level of insularity, the US would lose its mind, because it would, you know, only you can only buy US, and you wouldn't even scratch the surface of what China's doing. So it is incredible the level of subsidies that they've got for many of their industries as well, and it's a very unfair playing field. It's off the scale unfair.
Okay.
I think I need to see, I'd like to see an article like that really lays it all. I mean, that's a whole lot of article. I mean, that would be months of research. But because, you know, because I'm looking in, it's hard because we don't even know all the subsidies that China has right off the top. But it's hard to even keep in mind all the subsidies that we have here because, you know, at the state level, at the county level, you know, new factories get, you know, tax breaks and incentives and all that kind of stuff as well. But we don't have like the government telling us, oh, you better buy this, you know, just keep your social, what was that term they have in China, the social, social standing, but yeah, like your, I don't know, there was a thing a while back about just
your people, score.
Your score, right? Social yeah. score, which I don't know if that's even a thing, or but there was talk about something like that in the past. Anyway, I just like to see it all kind of laid out. Another thing I wanted to mention really too quick that I thought it was interesting. We talk about how, you know, China is making better cars than we are here, like electric vehicles. That's not necessarily, I don't know. Not every, I don't think every Chinese brand makes a better EV than what we make here necessarily. For instance, the head of Lucid, he was talking about this recently, and he was just saying that, you know, Tesla actually is still making better vehicles. Like their integration of electronics and different things about their systems are still, you know, fair amount ahead of what China is doing yet. And, you know, what's the name of the CEO of Lucid again?
Peter Rawlinson.
Peter Rawlinson, right. So he doesn't have a whole lot of love for Tesla, really. So, you know, he was the engineer behind, you know, the Model S program back in the day. And I think him and Elon have, you know, don't really see the eye to eye. So he's not usually handing out a lot of Tesla compliments. And he's got his own car company, you know. And their technology at Lucid, I think, is pretty advanced too. So I think we can compete, basically, on quality. Prices will be a challenge, but you know, we have to figure that out, basically.
I've seen before we move on, several comments today now saying this is going to kill Volvo.
Oh yeah, I wanted to mention
with the EX30. The US has a thing called the US duty drawback program, which dates back like a couple of hundred years, and companies can offset the import duties that you pay on goods by exporting similar products. So Volvo makes the EX90 in South Carolina. Possibly Volvo and Polestar can work together, the Polestar 3 will be made on US soil as well. Therefore, you can bring the EX30 in from China because you're exporting Volvos already from the US. I don't know the ins and outs of that program, by the way. Very right. Superficial details. But that's how the EX30 is so cheap in the US and will not get clobbered by 102% import duty. So no, if you've seen those comments, that's not true. The Volvo won't be hit by this.
Hopefully. I'd like to have somebody from Volvo come on and tell us about that. I don't know if they're willing to really talk publicly about it, if maybe it's too sensitive politically. I don't know.
Yeah, the amount of imports might be limited, tariff-free, by the volume of exports from the US.
Right,
you know, how many EX90s are going to be made compared to EX30s coming in? So you're right, it might not be so obvious.
Right. So let's. We just got a few minutes left, and I really want to talk about this Volkswagen ID. Buzz a little bit because that's coming. So a couple of days ago, we learned more about the 2025 Volkswagen ID. Buzz that's coming to the U.S. later this year. And man, is it just me, or is it feel like I've been waiting for this thing for like, I don't know, 5 years for the Buzz to get here? So basically, we get three trims: Pro S, Pro S Plus. And a launch-only first edition, and there are rear-wheel drive and all-wheel drive configurations. The Pro S, the base trim, is rear-wheel drive only. They all get 91 kilowatt-hour batteries, 20-inch wheels, 12.9-inch infotainment systems. I don't know if that's class-leading or not. 30-color ambient lighting and park assist plus. Those things are all standard, and they will have the options for captain's chairs, electrochromatic panoramic glass roof. So that's those glass roofs that can, you know, hit a button and it goes from opaque to transparent in a flash. It's pretty cool. And interesting option. Harman Kardon premium stereo, head-up display, flexboard cargo system. Don't even know what it is. Area view camera. I imagine that's a 360-degree camera view, and there's a bunch of two-tone paint colors to choose from, along with three single-color colors, I guess. So I don't know. Yeah, a lot to do with there. Are you excited? Are you excited about this car at all, Tom?
Let me unmute. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I still kind of am. I think it's such an interesting, cool vehicle, but I agree. I am like, I'm tired. I can't think of the word right now, but like when you're just tired of hearing about something, like, you know, when people get tired of always hearing about save the environment and everything, it's just kind of like, I've been hearing about it, went to the press events with Volkswagen, and it's just like, I almost feel like I'm over it now. You know, the vehicle's been out for a while in Europe, and, you know, it just, the timing, the way Volkswagen just dragged this on, fatigue, there you go, thank you, Sergio. I just couldn't pull that name out of my brain, fatigue. That's how I kind of feel about it now. But I still love it. It's such a cool vehicle. I'm really interested in seeing what the price is. I know I've heard between 55 and 60,000 starting, but I don't know. We don't know exactly where we're going to be at pricing wise. I have had the opportunity to, play around with one, and it's a cool vehicle. It still is really cool. But, I don't know how I feel, because it feels like I should have had this 3 years ago, you know, and, right. And now it's just coming out now. But I think once I see him on the road, I'm going to remember how cool it was.
It's three rows too, right? This is going to be another three row entrant, basically.
Yeah. In the US market, we're only getting the long wheelbase. So I think you can get it in a 6-seat or a 7-seat configuration.
Okay, so that'll put it up against the. So people will be cross shopping this with the Kia EV9 then.
Yeah, kind of. I think because of how unique it looks, like it's going to get a whole different segment of the market. You know, whereas the Kia EV9 is really going to be people that need, you know, family transportation. You know, so this, you'll get that, but also skewed towards people that kind of want to look cool and edgy. Not that the EV9 doesn't, you know, but you really can't compare how this thing looks to the EV9. The EV9 looks cool, but this isn't a totally different class. This is like, you know, do you want to drive a Cybertruck or do you want to drive an F-150 Lightning? You know, it's, you know, you want people to look at you with this thing, you know, and it's a cool vehicle. You know, you're going to get a lot of double takes on people like thinking, like their initial reaction that don't follow the EV market is like, you know, is that just like is that an old bus that somebody, you know, redid, you know, because it has all those styling cues and people aren't used to seeing them on the road anymore. If there were a ton of them on the road, you'd immediately know that it wasn't. But like, I see so few of them. I think the first time I saw one, I'd think it was an old one and then be like, wait a minute, that's all modern, you know? So it's cool. It's a cool vehicle. I liked my time that I got to play around with one, and I think it's going to do well. I really do, even though, you know, I don't think the public has that fatigue that we might, Dom, because we follow and obsess over this stuff so much. I think most people, you know, don't even know it's coming. And when it shows up, it's going to be, oh, wow, this thing's cool.
It's taken too long to get to you guys. It's been 2 years. September 22, it came out here. In July, we can order the long wheelbase Pro version. In August, we can order the GTX version, and you still haven't got it.
Are you seeing them around? Do you see them around there?
I mean, look, they're on the used market now. The residuals haven't been particularly strong on them. I'm not sure why, but yeah, you can pick up some used bargains. They're not bargains, but you can pick up some good ones on the used market, and I see loads of the vans, the van version being used for commercial purposes as well. You see loads of these around, and it's a very car driving like experience, driving the Buzz. So if you have to have a work van or a panel van, it still feels like you've got all the little comforts and luxuries of driving a car. Probably can't compete van wise in terms of being a pure van with something like the new e-Transit that was announced 2 weeks ago with a new bigger battery and the Pro Power and stuff on board. But still, it's been out here 2 years. I feel, why did VW of America take so long to bring it to your shores? It needs to hurry up and get it done.
Yeah. And Martin, you're saying it's been 2 years since you got it, which is true. But how long has it been since we were first shown it?
6 years.
That's really the fatigue part of it, you know?
They Volkswagen rolled out concepts of Volkswagen vans for a long time. Like, I think stretching back into the 2000s, I think the mid 2000s, they had some back then even. And there's every few years, oh, here's a new van concept that we won't make. But now they're going to make, now they're making one. They're, you know, it's in production and it's coming here. It's for real this time. It's just, yeah.
I think I was first properly exposed to it in on the Johnny Smith video for Fully Charged, which would have been that one when they brought it to the US. Yeah. And that was the concept. So that was 2018 that video was released.
Oh, geez, really? That was 2018? It's been
6 years ago, VW!
Oh, my God. It could have been gone through a refresh by now.
And I just checked. In 2 weeks, it'll be a year since Volkswagen had their reveal party here in the US and invited me, and I took videos of it and everything. So it's been a year since. Yeah, I mean, typically when you like say Kyle's doing the Equinox event, the Silverado event now, it's like the vehicle's available, you know, or very close to being available. But Volkswagen had the big buzz event here in the US in California a year ago. So it's longer than it usually takes after you get to really check out the vehicle.
Right. Mark Dummer asks, how on earth has VW not made a lightning bug yet? It's this little play on the beetle, the bug, lightning, right.
Collaborate with Ford.
Right. All right. So I guess we'll hear more about that coming up. There's just a couple other things I just want to mention really quickly before we go. The Rivian R1S and R1T are getting a YouTube app and a Google Cast. So Inside EVs has an article up on that. You can go check that out. Netflix streaming, lots of good stuff there coming to Rivian owners on the screen, which would be awesome. And Honda is investing over $64 billion in electrification, which is a huge number, I think that's by 2030, but it might be cumulative from 2020 to 2030, but the bulk of that spend would be over the next 5 years, basically. So, a lot going on there. They didn't roll out specific vehicles, but they're talking about, you know, I think there was like seven different vehicles they have coming up. Well, we'll be seeing soon. So it's kind of nice to see that, you know, some serious dollar bills being at least planned for in electrification. You know, they've been a little bit scattershot with their EV program so far. They make one. They have GM make them one. They have somebody else. They have they have one for Volkswagen. Maybe that's somebody else. But it just seems a little all over the place anyway. Yeah. So, yeah, that's about it, though. I think anybody want to add anything?
No, you're good.
I think that's good.
All right. So that brings us to the end of our show. If you have any questions or comments, please leave them below or get in touch with us on the social media platform of your choice. Don't forget, if you like the show, please give us a thumbs up, click subscribe, tap that bell icon for notifications. Thank you all very much for joining us, and we'll see you again very, very soon. Ciao.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.